The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Sean Kelly, who is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly, former CISO at EPA and former deputy CIO at Veterans Affairs on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Cyber Chat, where government leaders come to discuss the hottest cyber topics affecting us today. Now your host, Sean Kelly.
Today we're going to be talking to Michael Tice, Chief Engineer at the National Insider Threat Center at Carnegie Mellon University, and Matt Monahan, CEO of Forcepoint. Matt and Michael, I want to thank you very much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for inviting us.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it.
Gentlemen, I asked you to come on because I think the insider threat conversation needs to happen. I think that this is a definition that needs to a little more clarity and needs a little more understanding in the community. When I looked this up, the insider threat is most simply defined as a security threat that originates from within the organization being attacked or targeted, often an employee or officer of an organization or enterprise. But is it really that simple? Mike, do you want to start?
Sure. I actually did bring my definition, or the definition that we have at the National Insider Threat Center. And I think it's important to note that we changed it recently. So we had an original definition, which we used for about 15 years. And then we started looking at unintentional type of threats, realized we had two different definitions. Then we thought about workplace violence, thought we were going to end up with three different definitions. So we combined it all into one thing, and if you don't mind, I'll just go ahead and read it.
Go ahead.
It's the potential for an individual who has or had authorized access to the organization's assets to use those accesses either maliciously or unintentionally to act in a way that could negatively affect the organization. So basically, it covers a lot more than just employees or even former employees, but things like trusted business partners, those supply chain vendors, anyone who has access to your physical people, your physical facilities, your information, or your technology.
Okay. And Matt, what about you at Forcepoint? How do you guys define the insider threat?
No, we take a very similar view. I mean, if you look at the security market, about $1 trillion has been spent over the past 7 years trying to keep people out, and with a 95% failure rate, right, the attackers have gotten in. And so if you look at what fundamentally has changed, the human being has become one of the primary vectors of attack to get in. Identities and credentials are being stolen. And so if you start at the very premise, I totally agree with Michael, is that this could be a threat to the enterprise from anyone who has gotten access and is inside. Now, the definition of inside has become very blurry with things like digital transformation, movement to the cloud. So I think it really starts with access and privilege, and then what is the intent of the person who has that access or privilege. But I agree 100%.
So a lot of the human being countermeasures have notoriously been training. Let's train them, that we can stop them from making mistakes. Do you think that's really the case? Can we really stop the human error?
I've recently, the past 6 to 9 months, asked almost every CIO or chief security officer that I've met with whether they think that their business can ever, A, be 100% secure, and the answer is no. And then, two, what would be the primary vector of attack that you think is guaranteed to take place over the next 12 to 18 months? And it typically is a phishing or a spear phishing attack against a human. Right, the problem with the current security marketplace is that things have gotten so bad that we're forcing enterprises to try to become security companies. We're forcing individuals to try to become security experts, and that's not their day job. So I think hygiene training is certainly a part of a good hygiene approach. It does help raise the bar, but I don't think that is the answer, quite frankly. We need to do something more from a systems and technology perspective, in my opinion.
Michael, what do you think?
Well, I think training has two different aspects, but most heavily on the unintentional. So don't click on this link. Don't open this attachment. The other aspect of that is the awareness of what are your coworkers doing that could be putting us at risk as well. So reporting suspicious behaviors, not in the sense of like Big Brother, but in the sense of this may not be a safe act that I've seen this person. They just randomly click on everything. But for a malicious type of insider, I don't know that training helps very much unless it is somebody who observes the malicious person doing it. So I think you're going to need more than just training.
But I agree with that.
Go ahead, Matt.
It's interesting. And in fact, in many cases, for the true sophisticated insider threat, the more they know about the training and countermeasures, the more it may actually help them defeat them. So there is that balance for sure.
And I want to go back to something you said a few minutes ago, Matt. You mentioned that when you've talked to CIOs and asked them, can they be completely secure, they said no. And, you know, there's been a lot, every time there's a major data breach or a major hack, we hear legislators say, well, you know, we need to put stiffer fines or stiffer penalties on into legislation. Is that really the answer, though? And as you look at this, we're asking folks to, at an enterprise level, to become security experts. Is that fair?
You know, I think it's fair for proper care and caution to be taken. I think it's fair to ask that. Things like building codes, baseline elements that best efforts have been made to secure things. Absolutely. And I think we've seen some of these breaches show that some companies, although I don't think it's in the majority, some companies haven't invested like they should over the past decade. But the problem is most companies have. You know, it's now a board-level topic. It wasn't a decade ago. And, you know, the security spend as a percentage of total IT spend has gone from 1 to 1.5% a decade ago to 4 to 5% in many cases. So I think the challenge has been that despite the general best efforts of industry, it hasn't protected organizations when 95% have been or currently are breached by a foreign adversary. So the question is why? And, you know, I was in a large bank last week. They had spent clearly at least $100 million on their, the infrastructure-centric approach. And I simply asked them one question. I said, do you know what the entities, the people, your suppliers are doing on your network right now? They said no. So I think it's not just a spend issue. I do think it's an approach issue that we need to think about in addition to spend. But I don't think regulations can solve that problem.
Michael, based on what Matt just said, right, you know, one of the things that I read about the lessons learned from Equifax is that their security infrastructure and support did not grow at the same level the company was growing, right? So when we say that, did they spend enough, what's that percentage or number kind of got to look like?
So I kind of look at the regulation and compliance and mandates as kind of a two-edged sword, right? So on one side, you want to make sure organizations have actually paid attention. And sometimes these incidents tell us that, as a general rule, the attention's not being paid. I think, and my personal opinion is that sometimes, though, that causes you to chase one particular threat vector, and you're not being able to adapt to the new and changing threat vectors because it's like, well, I have to do this. I'm required by law. I'm required by some type of mandate or regulation. And they don't have that, discretion anymore to actually try to adapt to the newer things because they're required to put it over there first.
My guests today are Michael Tice, Chief Engineer, National Insider Threat Center at Carnegie Mellon, and Matt Monahan, CEO of Forcepoint. I am Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
I'm Jared Serbu. Each week, our program on DoD features discussions with the military's top brass, its civilian executives, and defense thinkers on how the Pentagon operates. It's reliable information from the people making and executing policy. Tune in Wednesdays at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network, or subscribe to On DoD on iTunes or Podcast One.
Welcome back to Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I am Sean Kelly. My guests today are Michael Tice, Chief Engineer, National Insider Threat Center at Carnegie Mellon University, and Matt Monahan, CEO of Forcepoint. Gentlemen, before we went on break, we were talking about malicious insiders, and that was mentioned in... So, Michael, what are the warning signs when you have a malicious insider?
Wow, that's a great question, and I will tell you it's a complex question. We've been doing this research since 2001, and we'll tell you that there's no one type of insider. It really depends on the type of threat. So are we talking about fraud? Are we talking about IT sabotage? Are we talking about intellectual property theft? Are we talking about some type of espionage? So it really depends on what is the organization's mission, what are their critical assets. Then you can figure out what the threat is that might be against those assets. Then we build the models. So what we publish are things that are more aligned with those thought processes. For fraud, what does the model look like? For intellectual property theft, what are you likely to see and when are you likely to see it? So it's not as simple as just saying, what do you look for? We do break it down by observables, both on human behavior and on technical type of observables. But again, those lists can be very long, and you really have to apply them to what the threat is against which assets.
Matt, and you see things from a cross-sector point of view. You get a lot of data points. From Malicious Insider, what kind of things are you seeing?
Yeah, no, I would agree with Michael. You know, it's interesting. The problem with the digital world, unlike the physical world, is that the founders of the Internet sort of built trust as one of the fundamental premises, right? So if you look at a physical world, you don't trust everyone. You have institutions like community watch programs or neighborhood watch programs that are looking out for physical cues. You have street lights as part of the infrastructure to shine light on potentially bad behavior and prevent muggings and things of that nature. The digital world has none of that. Right, and so I think, you know, in agreement with Michael, it's not one thing. It's not static. It is this dynamic, changing threat that you need to shine light on, much like a street light. And so some of them are physical cues. You know, to Michael's point earlier, if you see something, say something, those can be incredibly important. They can also be cues coming from, you know, contextual things like human resource systems or other types of things that might be happening in a person's life. But it's more around, I think, getting detailed visibility in a more 360 type of way that respects the privacy of the individual but provides the context, you know, that street lamp to make decisions in a more dynamic fashion than we've had in the past. So, you know, part of it could be company conditions, it could be personal conditions of a person, it could be credit worthiness of a supplier. It could be a very broad set of things that could ultimately lead you to having a successful identification of an inside threat.
Yeah, and I have to agree with that and sort of add on that, you know, from our perspective at the National Insider Threat Center, this is really about human beings. So the issue is human beings are very complex and they're very dynamic. And it's not about ones and zeros attacking other ones and zeros. Now, a human insider could use a cyber system to create the attack, but the idea is we want to focus on who are those people, what would they look like, what would be their motivations, what are the precursor behaviors, you know, what are the artifacts that are in your data that will help you determine that that attack could happen, or maybe has already happened, unfortunately, but we want you to be able to either prevent, detect, or respond to those threats.
You know, so we kind of talked earlier about a little bit how training is the answer. And, you know, Matt, I'll point this one to you. We can go to a technology, but the environment and the conditions of the organization have to be ready to accept that technology. You know, DLP, you know, we can put automated solutions in place, but if the organization isn't configured right, it is not to have standardization across the enterprise, you can probably break more than you can actually fix. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Sean, you're absolutely right. You know, so I think, first of all, the mindset needs to change. You know, trying to secure the perimeter or secure infrastructure hasn't worked. So we have to admit that. And so these new types of techniques that we've been talking about are almost really more around user monitoring, you know, and behavior analysis than, you know, monitoring the infrastructure, right? And with that comes a whole set of complex organizational issues that are, you know, quite frankly, could be more important than the technology itself. They range from, you know, fitting into the culture of an organization. They range to creating the proper procedures for handling something that can be incredibly sensitive and career impacting to an individual, to maintaining the social contract between employee and employer. You don't want to become a big brother. But that said, you know, given that some of the most advanced threats even involve terrorists that are infiltrating companies through employees, I think we all have to agree that, you know, the people, process, and technologies to stop these advanced insider threats need to change, and we need to start thinking more thoughtfully around how do we get deeper insight into the workforce and the extended workforce, including supply chain, while respecting the privacy rights of the individuals.
Michael?
And I do think that the new issue isn't going to be around whether we monitor or not, but it's going to be around how we handle the sensitive information that we're collecting, not so much whether collecting is important or not.
I want to pull a thread on that in a few minutes, but Michael, did you have a comment on that?
Yeah, so specifically you had mentioned DLP or any type of tool that's like that, that has sort of binary rules. The problem is going to be, like Matt had already mentioned, what is the context around the human's behavior? And so if we're just looking at you're not allowed to download this file, yeah, but what if there was a purpose and a reason for downloading the file that was truly authorized. And that's what makes it very difficult to try to fine-tune those types of sort of binary rules. So having something like a user behavioral analytics, user activity monitoring, those types of things that can put that picture together, it helps you to more, I would say, more refine the thought process as to whether or not this could be for a real reason or a potential malicious reason. But having said that, I agree completely that we have to look at the civil liberties and the privacy of the employee.
Yeah, so I want to go down that. You know, so how do we accomplish all of that and still protect people's privacy?
Yeah, so it's not an easy answer, but there are professionals out there who are actually certified in privacy by international organizations that even in the U.S. government, there are privacy officers for I believe every agency, I might be wrong on that, but probably every agency. And so you want to do anything with your insider threat program that is constantly in concert with them. So in other words, you don't put something in place before you talk to them and say, hey, is this going to be a problem once an issue pops up? You want to be talking to them ahead of time, finding out what are our issues, how do we maybe need to configure it slightly differently so that we meet the mission, but we still protect the privacy and civil liberties.
Matt, you know, okay. Go ahead, Matt.
No, I was going to say, I agree with that 100%. And, you know, I think there's, and so ForcePoint uses all of our own technology on our own company. And so what we found is being transparent, you know, with our employees about what we're doing and what's acceptable or not. And we have a very simple rule, you know, don't violate any legal compliance, regulatory, or, you know, social or moral, you know, law that in the physical world that you'd feel uncomfortable doing in the digital world. You know, outside of that, I don't even care. I mean, go shop, do whatever you want to do. The world has changed. We're not using this to monitor productivity. So I think, you know, having that conversation with the employees is absolutely critical in making sure that what you're doing matches to the culture of that organization. And it varies by company. Two is that the chain of custody over the information is so important. And I think as we saw with Facebook Cambridge Analytica, you know, they probably violated the spirit of the law, but not the letter of their end-user license agreement. And then Facebook had very broad use of data contracts that probably no one who used Facebook even understood. But they violated the spirit of the law, and as a result, they lost 25% of their market capitalization. You can't have that happen. And so in our company, you know, if I were to do something wrong, that would be sort of the ultimate insider, right, being CEO of the company with understanding that other employees did not have. I should not be not subject to those same things. But what we put in place was a chain of custody so that anyone who sees my information, it starts with the general counsel and the chairman of our board. It's not a lower-level analyst that could misinterpret something. So I think, you know, collecting is not bad. How you handle the sensitive information that ties it to identity is going to be really an important part of this process.
Understood.
Yeah, so, I mean, we have courses that we teach on how to stand up insider threat programs, how to be a program manager, and one of those key components, we have 13 components, but one of the key components is basically how are you going to collect the data in a way that is useful, but also is protected, that it ensures that there are privacy and civil liberties, that you have custody and control of it, that it is for the proper use. And so that's, again, goes back to some of the tenets that are within privacy is what was the use for collecting it? How did you communicate that to the individual before you collected it? And are you actually still continuing to use it and protect it in the way that you originally said you would?
My guests today are Michael Tice, Chief Engineer, National Insider Threat Center at Carnegie Mellon University, and Matt Monahan, CEO of ForcePoint. I am Sean Kelly. This is CyberChat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
This is Jason Miller, Executive Editor of Federal News Network, inviting you to listen to Views from the Corner Office. Every week, we sit down with industry leaders who influence and impact the federal market. The show is not about the individual company, but about the opinions of the people who lead federal practices on technology, acquisition, and leadership issues. Tune in Fridays at noon on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network, or subscribe to Views from the Corner Office on iTunes or Podcast One.
Welcome back to CyberChat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I am Sean Kelly. My guests today are Michael Tice, Chief Engineer, National Insider Threat Center at Carnegie Mellon University, and Matt Monahan, CEO of ForcePoint. We talked a little bit about perimeter defense, and let's be honest, there's still a lot of organizations that are tackling security or cybersecurity in a perimeter way. How do we move them away from that way to the where we need to go? Matt.
Well, I think it's probably one of the more difficult jobs for a chief security or chief information officer is that when the threat vector has changed and how quickly can you move the spending model without breaking your current security model but aligning it towards where the security threat is going. It's very, very difficult. You know, the threats move faster than the organizational cadence, if you will. And so I think perimeter defense will always be important, but it's clear with things like digital transformation, development of cloud and mobility, that there is no single perimeter anymore. And so, I think the biggest issue is to sit back and say, you know, what really are you trying to protect at the end of the day? You know, you're trying to protect your user's identity from being compromised, and you're trying to protect your data from being exfiltrated from anybody who has authorized access to it, whether it be a legitimate person or someone who has stolen someone's credentials. I think if you can start thinking about that, you can start taking incremental steps towards changing your spend from a perimeter-heavy approach to one that has moved the unit of analysis to people and data, which really, at the end of the day, are where that magic happens for a company. You know, who's accessing the data? What are they doing with it? And what risk does that represent to the organization? I think the days of trying to keep people out are gone. It's still important, but it's become almost good hygiene, not an effective solution for some of the nastier, viruses, if you will, that are, plaguing us.
Michael?
Yeah, so I see the question about the perimeter as opposed to the inside as a complex one, but you can boil it down in a couple of ways. One is that every year we conduct research on how many insider threat incidents how many cyber incidents an organization has had and how many of those were insider incidents. And then we ask them how they handled it and what the costs were. And for about the last 12 years, we have found that the cost of the insider has been generally higher than any outsider attack. But in the media, you're going to hear about the big outsider attacks because of a couple of reasons. One, they have to be reported. Two, they're usually very big impact when they happen. When we talk about the insider, we see that on average, between 75 or 79% per year are never reported. So the organization handles the insider attack on their own, which means no one really knows that the problem is just as big or bigger as outsider attacks. So one thought process I like to use is, if you can keep an authorized user from doing an authorized thing for a malicious purpose, then you should be able to keep an outsider person who's even using that credential to do an authorized thing for a malicious purpose. So we don't have exact numbers, or at least I don't have them in the top of my head. But when we tried to compare it, we feel like there's between 70 and 90% of all attacks could be stopped. If you can stop your trusted insider from doing it maliciously, you can probably stop an outsider from doing it maliciously as well.
So we know that most of our attacks today are automated. We know that there's kits out there that very inexperienced hackers can download. There's a tutorial, they can launch it. But inside these organizations, what part does automation play? And are we ready for in a lot of organizations, especially in the federal government? Michael.
Well, okay, I'll take that first. First of all, I don't speak for the government, but I will say that I think that in a general rule, most organizations, including the government, are able to use automated aspects to do this. But again, it comes down to, even if it was a rootkit or it was something that was designed to be run automated in an automated fashion, it's still being run by a human being for a purpose that that human being is trying to accomplish. So if we understand context about what's going on, then we have a better chance of realizing this isn't really an authorized user, or it isn't an authorized purpose, or even though it's an authorized user and an authorized purpose, it's for a malicious intent, and that we can intercede at that point.
Matt?
No, I think automation needs to play a huge role because despite the sophistication of the technologies that exist now, organizations are still struggling, and I put the government and agencies in this one, with a human bottleneck. Right? There's only so many good people who truly can stitch together the various elements of forensics, if you will, to determine what's happening and properly respond to an incident. So I think the use of technologies like machine learning can obviously play a large role in automation. You know, Michael mentioned user behavior analytics sitting side by side with that can play a huge role to help get the fidelity of the event to be stronger signal and less noise. So I think, you know, automation absolutely has to be a big part of it. The interesting thing about focusing on the human, as Michael mentioned, as a unit of analysis, is that you can be more aggressive in the use of applying automated countermeasures. In the past, you would very rarely, if ever, change a policy based on a condition and push a rule to block something at the endpoint or shut your network configuration down in a certain way. Because what happened was the user experience or the customer support calls just overwhelmed a business or an agency with noise, you know, support, anger, productivity impacted. When you're looking at the human as a unit of analysis, you're moving it from the thousands and millions who would be affected to an individual. And that's really powerful because, you know, you can make a mistake once in a while. So I think automation from machine learning all the way to the automated application of micro policies is something you're going to see a lot more of in the industry.
But, you know, as a former CISO, I'm often at the mercy of operations, IT operations. And so good housekeeping, inventories, data inventories, classifications, clean network configuration, standardization. Is automation, without most of those things being in place, is automation really even possible?
My opinion is you have to have those things, but also, again, you have to have the models of what is the behavior that you would expect to see and what are the troubling things that are outside the baseline. And I hadn't mentioned this before, but we publish all of that research freely. Everything that I talked about can be downloaded from our website.
Matt, what about you?
I think you can. We haven't talked much about visibility, right? So I think, you know, different levels of automation will be, more useful or not based on some of the things you mentioned. But I do think that with proper visibility, automation wrapped around identity is getting better and better. We still have a long way to go, but I do think it's, quite promising you can sort of leapfrog, you know, some of these legacy issues we've been dealing with if you change the unit of analysis from the entirety of the network to identities and accessing data. I think it's possible.
My guests today have been Michael Tice, Chief Engineer, National Insider Threat Center at Carnegie Mellon University, and Matt Monahan, CEO at Forcepoint. I am Sean Kelly. Thank you for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Sean Kelly and stay up to the latest cybersecurity news on cyberchatnews.com. We will talk to you soon.
You've been listening to CyberChat with Sean Kelly on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Tune in Friday mornings at 10:30 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.
Hi, this is Sean Kelly, host of CyberChat. As a former federal CIO and CISO, I can tell you the threat landscape is a dynamic and evolving matter. My conversations with federal leaders from across the government focus on the latest trends and hottest cyber topics and challenges. Join me for a high-level conversation about how agencies maintain mission security. Tune in Friday mornings at 10:30 on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network, or subscribe on iTunes and Podcast One.